Ever wanted to grow a beautiful bouquet from your very own backyard? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our gardening show, we'll hear how to plant a cutting garden for homegrown blooms, plus the lowdown on growing the best tomatoes and peppers, and experts here to answer all your questions for the full hour. Joining me now are Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director, Peter Huttinger. Welcome back, Peter.
Thank you.
Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent, Sarah Imbus. Thanks for being here, Sarah.
So fun.
And the Flower Lady OTR owner, Christina Matthews. Welcome to the program, Christina.
Hi, thank you.
If you have questions about your garden, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. So, Christina, for somebody who wants to plant a flower garden to yield these beautiful cut flowers, what are the most important things to keep in mind?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I'm going to go right into it's this month. It's June. And we always think everything needs to be planted right around Mother's Day. Well, I'm here to tell you there is still time. In fact, I just started some seeds yesterday. So in regards to growing a beautiful cut flower garden, you don't need a lot of space. You can start very small and start with varieties that are easy. Ones that I would say are easier would be your zinnias, your sunflowers, your marigolds. Those also are really wonderful because most, I'll call them predators, but your garden predators stay away from them. And then I would also say having a nice plot that's filled with great soil would be a great recipe in having a cut flower garden.
Yeah. Peter, are there vegetables or herbs you can plant with flowers for visual appeal to also kind of keep those garden pests away?
Yeah, the common one is French marigold with tomatoes and you can get them among peppers. Another thing, a lot of people will alternate tomato plants and basil, to kind of save space, but then also it acts as a somewhat of a deterrent. Mm-hmm. Some people on brassicas will, if you have mint, you have an abundance of mint. Some people will cut pieces of mint and put those on like every third broccoli plant. They feel that is, some of these things are sort of home remedies that, maybe they haven't been tested, but I always figure they're safe enough to do. But with the French marigolds also, it has to do with the dynamics of the soil. There's fungi that they support life of, and that's builds up a relationship between the flower of the plant and the microorganisms and in the soil itself. So companion plantings is always a good idea.
Yeah. Christina, I read that there are some herbs you can plant to kind of keep fungal diseases like mildew and black spot at bay from your cut flower garden. Do you ever do that?
Yes, I'm always mixing all different varieties of herbs in. My favorite go-tos, I would say, would be dill, fennel, basil. I love lemon balm, too, is a really nice one. And those all do really well from seed. And then I have a ton of mint, too. And I know many people can feel differently with mint. However, I use so much of it as a florist designer. I don't have a problem with it. But like Peter just mentioned, using mint sprigs on your broccoli to keep things away is also really helpful. So they can help with an array of different problems in your garden.
Yeah. Sarah, I know you get a million questions about a million things from people as an extension agent. Are there particular types of flowers that you get the most questions about? People say this thing just won't grow, or it's growing like I didn't expect, or something like that.
Oh, it's very seasonal. I will start with that, right? For right now, it's potting container garden right now, all your vegetables, right? And so we go through that. And then here later this summer, our late tomato crop, maybe then our vine crops, secondary crops, if you will. And then when we move into the fall, it's all about tree and shrub planting. It's all about fertilizing. And then it cycles, right? So I hope that answers your question, yeah. Lucy, but it's very cyclical, not only with plants, but of course, weather, very dependent upon weather, and then your overall soil makeup.
Yeah. What about flowers in particular? Are there any flowers that people really struggle with?
Overall, lately, I'd say over the last few years, with all these very strange weather patterns, heavy downpours, right? We're not getting these mists much anymore, right? We forget about those sometimes. And so what I'm trying to strategize in our education garden and teach, right, is think of how this plant will thrive during very wet times and maybe even during drought. So, you know, I'm not a pure native person, though I do like natives, but I also choose native R's, particularly disease resistance, for example. But then some plants, tree shrubs, non-natives can do just as good. So I always choose the right plant for the right site, mm-hmm. bottom line. But I'm always thinking of rain, lots of rain, and then droughts.
Okay. We're talking about gardening for the full hour today. If you've got questions for our experts, and we know you have questions, call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Christina, you grow a lot of flowers in a lot of different places. Are any of these weather patterns giving you trouble, like what Sarah was just talking about?
Oh, goodness, yes. particularly this winter was difficult. Things that had overwintered previously, like my eucalyptus, some of my tubers, completely goners. It was just too cold. And then that wild, hot patch we got in early spring. I was grateful I wasn't growing tulips because everybody that was, they were blowing open so mm-hmm. quickly. Mm-hmm. And then that wild rain that we just had about a week and a half ago was difficult because that was like, I got to get so much in the ground, but not when it's, you know, few inches of rain. But this last few weeks has been beautiful, the weather. So lots of planting has been happening.
Yeah. Well, Peter, we've already got an email from a listener named Mark. Mark asks, I have a raised bed that I've been using for years for vegetables. I don't want to continue to buy new soil to be added to it each year. I lose soil volume every year, so clearly something needs to be added, but I'm hoping for a more economical and DIY practice to incorporate. I've tried cover crops to try and maintain the soil integrity and have cut them down to mix it back into the soil, but the soil is still, for lack of a better word, dusty and lacks that rich color that makes you think the soil is healthy. Any tips? What do you think, Peter?
Well, it's a lack of organic matter in the soil. So, and unfortunately, when you're working with a raised bed, it's not uncommon for raised beds to be 4 by 8 feet. But regardless of its size, you're going to need to add organic matter. So you don't want to add soil. You want to add compost. So if you want to generate your own, if you're in a situation where you can have your own compost pile, I know that you can get those soil machines, like the black containers, or just have a pile and maintain it and then add your own compost to it, or else you can, you know, buy finished compost. Unfortunately, the bag products, as a general rule, are not really all that good. That's kind of tricky. And if you go to certain places like the larger landscaping distributors, you know, they're usually selling it. A lot of them don't even sell it by the bag. Hmm. So it's can be tricky to get to. But Queen City Commons is working with a Common Orchard Project, and they're in Camp Washington. You can contact them. They are generating compost on site. Excuse me. And that you can buy a sort of like the pickle bucket full. Mm-hmm. And so I would recommend just adding two of those bags or five, you know, around 10 gallons and work it into the soil. And what you can do is also, you also want to do that in spring and then also in the fall. But if you collect leaves at home, you can chop them up with your lawnmower and so that they go and bag them. And you work those atop dress of soil in the summer, or excuse me, in the fall, to overwinter in that. And if you are interested at the Price Hill Community Garden, we have a number of different composting schedules and systems and soil amendment programs that we do there. You're always welcome to stop by and see what we're doing there. And you could get my contact information through the radio station.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I hope that helps. Sarah, I know we've talked with you before about composting, but just as a reminder for folks, it's not as easy as just throwing stuff in a bucket and the magic happens, right? I mean, there's some thought that you have to put into composting.
I mean, it's a science, right? And so, and it is a managed system, no matter the scale of which one is managing, right? And so there are tons of information from the University of Kentucky. We have publications. I refer to it as lasagna layering, right? There's a great mix of carbon to nitrogen ratio, brown material, green material, all the good stuff, what you can compost, what you cannot compost, both in urban sectors, as well as your more rural traditional type settings. It's also helpful to, if you have an HOA, reach out to your HOA before you even start getting, you know, deep into the dirt, if you will, about a compost system. So always check that. There are different compost bins. You know, of course, I have my preferences just because I've dealt with quite a few. And so research that too. Like, think about your back. Think about the volume. It's heavy. and think about where you're going to put it. If it's really far away out of, say, your kitchen door, you're more likely not going to take your scraps out hot summer days, cold winters, right? Think about closeness what types of materials are you composting? Are you a cook? Do you eat lots of fruits and vegetables? Do you garden? What kind of scraps do you gather from your garden? So all those things, right? We can get real deep about this conversation. Yeah. So I just always advise, you know, reach out to me, even, you know, if you're not in Kentucky, but would like to chat, send me photos of your space, what you're thinking about. We can still have a conversation. I'd love to have those conversations and then, you know, connect you with whomever else and Peter as well. So yeah, it's really fun. And there's different types. Vermicomposting is really fun too, especially with children, to see how that just the magical process, right? And it's really fun to take it, if you will, on the road. So that's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just one thing I mentioned briefly too is remember no protein. I mean, yes. No dairy, no meat.
Oils.
Heavy oils. But basically, what that can attract raccoons mm-hmm. and rodents and rats. So, but if you're just putting in vegetables, you have very little possibility of that happening.
Absolutely.
Really. Raccoons don't like vegetables.
Well, they may get into the food a little bit, but it's not going to be an attractant like if you put in meat and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just something to kind of remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great tip. Didn't know that about raccoons. No, I guess that's why they're so round.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Christina, let's talk more about the cutting garden. When it's time to bring these beautiful blooms that you've grown inside, what's the best way to actually cut them? You have to be careful about that too, right?
Great question. I would say if I had to give one tip, it would be cutting them in the coolest part of the day. Now, whether that is an early morning or late evening, cutting them at that coolest time of the day is really important. You really can't revive a flower if you cut it in the middle of the afternoon when it's 95 degrees. It just will never bounce back. So cutting it in the cooler parts of the days would be my biggest. And then it is not a myth. Cut your flowers at an angle. I try to explain to people that if you are drinking a milkshake and your straw hits the bottom and it's hard for that milkshake to come up the straw, same thing with a flower. If you cut it flat and it hits the bucket, it just makes it a little bit harder for that flower to suck the water up. So cutting it at a sharp angle allows it to drink up that water a lot faster. So that's a really good tip. You can do some conditioning to the water. You know, you get those floral packets whenever you buy a bouquet. And if you have that on hand, you can throw that on in the water. But honestly, if you just are changing the water once you cut a flower for an arrangement daily, it'll last. And it lasts very long. It's just usually, are we mindful enough each day to be able to change that water? So that's where that floral packet does help us. It gives us a little bit of a leeway if we aren't changing the water every day. But those would be my three biggest tips for harvesting.
What's in those little floral packets? If you don't have a packet, is there something at home that you can stick in there with your water to help the flowers?
Yeah, I've heard so many different things, from a penny, from a cap full of Sprite.
A penny.
I believe it's like a penny from before, like, is it like 1970s or something? It's like a true copper penny, and
wow.
That helps. Sprite, a couple drops of bleach, I've heard. And then in the florist world, they make kind of those things. But usually those additives that go into the water have a little bit of sugar, which helps keep the vibrancy in the color of the flowers, and then a little bit of a cleaning solution to help keep that water from breeding bacteria from things like the leaves. And that would be another great tip. If you're going to have anything in water after you cut it, make sure that the leaves aren't in the water, stems only, and that'll help keep the water clean.
This explains so much of the crud that has grown on the cut flowers I've had for so many years. I just, after a few days when I haven't changed that water, it starts to look like a horror show.
And some varieties are a little bit worse than others. So, you know, a dahlia has a really nice, smooth skin, as opposed to a sunflower or a zinnia. They're a little furrier. And the ones that have more of like the furrier stems, they tend to breed more bacteria than the ones with the smoother stems. So if you kind of know that, you can know what you can get away with a little bit when you're changing out that water.
Okay, it's always about doing the homework.
Right.
Well, we are talking about gardening for the full hour. We'll be back with our gardening show after a short break. If you've got questions, now's a great time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wbxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We are back with our gardening show. My guests are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Imbus, the Flower Lady OTR owner Christina Matthews, and Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We've got some callers on the line. Let's start with Megan. Hi, Megan. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. I live in an apartment and I love to garden, but I don't really have great options to do so. And I was just wondering if you guys had any suggestions.
That's great. Do you have a little balcony or anything, Megan?
I don't, but I do have a small area on the side of the house that they said we would be allowed to do things with. Not sure what extent we could go with that, but
sure. Well,
we have small outdoor areas.
Sounds like potential. Sarah, do you have ideas?
Yeah. So I always start with, what is your sun exposure and what is it that you're wanting to do with this space? Is it ornamentally? Is it edible? Is it a combination of? So, but sun exposure is huge. And then looking at the soil. So we can maybe add a few things to the soil, but sometimes it's a little tricky to add a little sunlight exposure to an area, maybe thinning out trees, which is a whole other nightmare, right? But buildings create shade, right? You can't really move that. So let's start with that. So what's your sun exposure? What is it that you're wanting to grow? Just again, ornamentally or a combination of edible landscaping. And then from there, it's just kind of, that's where you get a little in trouble, like plant shopping, right? And so like, how crazy can one want to get? Again, I'm happy if you want to send me pictures of this space. Once you kind of figure out those details, I'm happy to go there. But
yeah. Megan, do you have a feel for what your sun exposure is in that little plot of land that you might have some opportunity with?
We do have some sun. We have a ton of plants indoor in one of our front windows. But I definitely think I would be looking to do a combination of edible and just pretty.
Just pretty. So, 6 hours or more of sunlight ideally for most of our vegetable crops, right? So tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, squash, zucchini, all that jazz. If you have deer pressure, that could also cause a little, we could fence or whatever. But of course, one of my favorite herbs actually to use in mix with edibles and ornamental landscape is lavender. I love lavender. Phenomenal. Ooh. It's a cultivar that I absolutely love. And it stays, it's very hardy here. It loves dry, which I have dry soil. And so just love it. And then the spikes of the flowers that you harvest are just stunning. So I value that plant very much. So, and it's easy to propagate too. I would think of like your hardscape, like anything that you want shrub like. So do you want to create a habitat for birds and that as well? And then kind of layer your landscape, right? Tall towards the back, then the middle, and then your bedding or your foundation planting, if you will, or border plants, sorry. So I hope that helps, but I'm talking with my hands right now. And so like, I'm trying to visualize a space. So it's really, I'm a very visual person. So if I welcome any pictures to my email that you can find on the website here on the radio. So feel free to send pictures.
Yeah. Peter, anything you want to add for Megan?
No, I think, I mean, one thing I always encourage people, if check your neighborhood to see if there's a community garden that you could participate in. Mm. I mean, of course, you want to do some things for your home, but that's also, you know, particularly for growing vegetables. And most of the gardens also have cut flower areas. So I really encourage you to do that. You can contact me through the radio program for our locations. And then also the Civic Garden Center has an extensive list of community gardens around the city that you could contact them for some addresses that might be close to you.
Yeah. Well, Megan, I sure hope that helps. Good luck with your gardening.
Yes, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye-bye. We now have Wanda on the line. Hi, Wanda. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Oh, hi. I'm just driving past my old organic farm called Elf Farm right now.
Okay.
And I was gifted with a full-grown yucca with its flowering, and I'm not quite sure what to do with it. I'm a Texan, so they grow down there, but we have kind of clay soil up here, and I just need a little advice on, you know, what I should possibly amend in the soil when we dig the hole.
To make that yucca happy?
I want a happy yucca, honey.
Don't we all? We all want happy yuccas. Who has thoughts for
Would you
Wanda?
Like this one?
No, no, thank you. Go ahead, Sarah.
Okay, so whenever we're transplanting, especially a plant that is blooming right now, fortunately, I would cut off that bloom. You want all that. I know, but hey, you could use it as a cut flower.
Yes.
Honestly, you could use it. It has
there
a second purpose, right? And so, don't throw it. And then after that, put it in a compost pile. So three purposes.
I'm an organic farm. So
perfect.
Thank you.
Yes. And so you want all of that energy and focus on that roots to anchor itself down in its new little space, right? And so most yuccas are very hardy here. And so I try not to baby my plants too much. We have some yuccas in our education garden. Yes, we do have clay soil, of course, but we always add to the top, not in the planting hole, because we don't want to create that water bowl, if you will. So we always top dress with some mushroom compost or compost that we have. I hope that's easy, but I also try not, I understand our soil. So if it's in a really wet area, I'm not going to put it there, right? So if it's in an area where it gets wet feet, it just doesn't like wet feet. It does like to dry out in areas. So maybe an area near a brick building, right? That radiates some heat. That would be lovely.
That works.
Okay.
How about out in the field where it gets sun? Will that work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it loves sun. Yes, it loves sun.
Okay.
But just keep in mind, no, like, low areas where it can collect water.
No, I got you.
And then top dress.
And then I have one more question. Okay. Mm-hmm. One more question. I just found some plants called esperanzas, which are like yellow trumpet flowers that grow again in my neck of the world in Texas. And they're beautiful. I want to plant them here. Do you think that would work?
Is anybody familiar with those flowers
not
Wanda's talking about?
No.
You have stumped us, Wanda. I guess they're not growing a lot around here. So,
well, one thing you want to make sure. Well, you want to make sure that it's not something that's going to become invasive. So you want to kind of look into that some.
Yeah.
And then just if you have them and you've determined that they're not invasive or going to be a problem, just to try a small area and plant them. And, you know, if you have two areas with different soil conditions or different lighting conditions, you can see how they go. But I'd do a little more research on it to make sure you don't end up with a nightmare in the long run.
Yeah, Missouri Botanic Garden has a lovely plant database. You can put in a common name or botanical name, and it comes up with a lot of, I mean, other botanic gardens and extension offices also have that, but I really enjoy that as an educational piece, quick resource.
Yeah. Well, Wanda, best of luck with those flowers and with your yucca. We're rooting for you here. So thanks so much for calling. We appreciate it. Take care. Well, we are talking about gardening for the full hour today. We've got experts here to answer your questions. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Christina, I understand that you help people grow flowers to use at their weddings.
Yes.
How much lead time do people need to do that? Like, if you're getting married in 2 weeks, that's not going to work to grow them from seed, but probably.
No, but you can come out to my farm and see what I have blooming and be a part of that process and incorporating what is growing during your wedding. So I would say if you are getting married and you want to reach out, especially to a farmer florist, I mean, I'm able to plant specifically for your wedding. Just think about the season ahead. I'm doing most of my buying, planting, and preparing in late fall, early winter. So that would be a great time to reach out and let me know you're engaged and you would like to see some of the things that I'm growing into your wedding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those would be the two.
Yeah. What if you want to grow your own, though? How much lead time should you have if you want to do it yourself?
Well, I would say you need to be getting started early spring. So I would say start planting and planning in the late fall, winter, and have flowers blooming July-ish. So then you could get married anytime in August, September, or even October before the first frost.
Okay. And you mentioned going out to your farm. Do people come out and pick them themselves, or do they just tell you what they're looking for? How does that work?
You know, each one of my clients is kind of a case-by-case basis, but if you do decide that we're going to work together and I'm your florist for your wedding, you do have the opportunity to do a meeting with me out in the garden, and we try to plan that about 30 days before the wedding, so you're seeing what I'll actually be using for your day. And, you know, I will say that most of the couples I work with say that that meeting was one of their favorite memories of the process, because it is truly fun. You get to come, walk through a garden, choose things, see little cute frogs on all of my flowers. So it's a very fun way to get excited for your big day. Okay. And see the investment you're making in your flowers. You know, it's a beautiful thing to have a local grower create something so special for your day and your love.
Well, we have an email from Laura. Laura writes, that her bee balm is just starting to bloom. She says, how can I get a second set of blooms for later in the summer? Do I need to deadhead? And if so, do you just cut off the flower? Anybody have thoughts on that, bee balm?
I think they're continuous bloomers. Now, I will say the straight species, I don't have that in my head right now if anyone wants to chime in, but they are very susceptible to downy mildew. Mm-hmm. And so that can definitely decrease their productivity and even cause death. Any other comments?
Yeah, I do. My big bright red bee balms are also getting ready to bloom, and I do deadhead. I kind of let the hummingbirds tell me when to deadhead. I grow
them. How do they tell you? How do they let you know?
Well, they kind of stop going to the dead flowers, and when they stop buzzing over there, I snip it off, and then they kind of branch two little ones, and they're not as prolific of a bloom, but they're still blooms, and the hummingbirds still come for them. So do a little bit of deadheading.
Okay. Watch those hummingbirds.
Well, you know, thinking about the flowers too, I think, I guess it's the last 5 or 8 years, I've noticed more and more small flower farms that are doing custom things like what Christiana was talking about. I think it's so interesting as opposed to these big wholesale houses where things are, you know, very commercial. Most of the independent flower people I know are all doing it organically. So there's a lot of ecological reasons. It's good to support the local economy. And it's just like restaurants and people who are involved with the culinary world, you know, dealing with seasonal foods as opposed to you know, having things shipped from all over the world. It's I think it's just really nice. Yeah. I think it's a really positive thing that people are doing.
Okay, tacky question. What's the cost compared to going to just a big old florist to get your flowers? Is that too tacky to ask? I mean, is it more expensive, less expensive, about the same?
I would say about the same, really. Mm-hmm. But you're getting such better flowers with us. You truly are. I mean, when you go to the big box store, you're paying probably around the same, but these flowers have been cut, shipped, trucked, planed to wherever they're going, out of water for a long time.
Kept in refrigeration or something.
Yeah, and who knows what kind of chemicals were placed on them, to whether it's to keep the preservation until they do get to water or to keep all the pests off of them. And like Peter just highlighted, I mean, we're working and growing in organic ways, and we're cutting them the week of your wedding. Mm-hmm. So it's truly a great experience and mm-hmm. worth working with a local grower.
And you don't have to, they're not only for weddings,
yeah.
too. You know, that's something to kind of consider. I mean, classically for Valentine's Day, you give roses, but you can think about like what's more available, you know, regionally and locally, and trying to coming up with something that's nice and colorful. And Turner Farm has a CSA, a subscription, where you pay a flat amount of money at the beginning of the year, and then you can come out and you get so many stems a week. And I'm sure Christiana mm-hmm. probably does some more things. And it's just a really nice situation, I think.
Yeah. Christina, when you have couples coming and looking around your garden and seeing the little frogs and having that whole experience, are there types of flowers that work best for weddings? We have all the standard ones in our heads that you get from those big box places, but what about when you're going to a farmer? What are the kinds of flowers that work best?
Yeah, I mean, I think every farmer will grow what works best for them. You know, a farm in Price Hill might do really well with one variety, but I can't grow it for anything, you know? So I've been doing this now for many, many years. So in the beginning, I used to try to grow everything. And now I've really solidified what I grow to what I use most, what most of my clients are happy with. And that would include things like dahlias. Out of my three gardens, one I plant mostly with those. So those are always wonderful to have. They're big and beautiful, and you don't have to worry about having a rose if you have dahlias in there. And then they're coming out with just such beautiful color variations for your old classic zinnia. You know, before there were always these bright carnival colors, which I still love and plant. But now you're seeing these varieties like Johnny Seeds has one called Linen, and it's this beautiful buttery color. So those are really good ones to plant. And then I also grow a lot of everlastings. So flowers that are great fresh, but also great dried. Mm-hmm. And in that seasonal time where I can no longer grow because it's winter in Ohio, I use a lot of those dried flowers in arrangements. So I'm still working with my flowers, but maybe in a different way. So when Peter just mentioned Valentine's Day, I don't sell other flowers. I sell heart-shaped Valentine's Day wreaths covered with all of my beautiful dried flowers from the season that I've saved. So there's still fun ways to kind of support your grower, even if it's the middle of winter with a lot of snow on the ground.
Yeah. And I imagine some it depends on the time of the year, too, that you're looking at what different flowers would work best.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have another caller on the line. Hey, Julie, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. Yes. I have a small redbud tree in my front yard that this spring, it came out beautifully, but then all the leaves turned brown and curled, and now it's just covered in dead leaves. And I wondered if you knew what was going on there.
Mm. Sarah, do you have thoughts?
I don't. So the first question that comes to mind, is it a fairly new transplant within the last 3 years?
I think it's probably been about 4.
Okay.
And also similar leaf curl and browning happened on some plants that were nearby, including a small peccary tree and a catalpa tree. But they are still fine. It's just the redbud that really just kind of all turned brown.
Okay, so another thing that happened the day after Derby, if we all remember, we had a really cold freeze. And so I know that actually I've had some producers had some really major issues. But ornamentally, I haven't seen that. Magnolias, they all got burnt. I mean, that's just what happens, unfortunately. But they leaf out. They typically have a second leaf set, you know, that they can, you know, produce out. So other thing that I'm thinking about is just, you know, maybe was something in the roots, was something applied, perhaps, you know, environmentally. I think, of course, that freeze that we had. But if everything else is, if you will, bouncing back, then I'm wondering if something was other root disturbances in the area.
Do you have anything you want to add, Peter?
Well, with red buds, I mean, they're pretty hardy. It's a kind of a waiting game. If I would rake up the dead leaves around it and put it out in your yard bags. I would just give it time to see if my guess is it'll re-leaf out.
Some of the smaller branches
may die back, but just kind of observe, and then I'd wait at least 30 days before I did anything.
And bend those tips of those branches, you know, it should have some elasticity, right? So bouncing mm-hmm. back. And if you go like that and it goes crunch, then it's like, oh, well then kind of on that same branch, go down a little further. And if it keeps crunching, right, then you're like, oh no. So hopefully there's some elasticity. Go out and talk to it, you know, sing it your favorite song, something like that, bond with it. And
Will do.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Julie. We hope it works out for you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Bye-bye.
Oops, bye-bye. So we are going to be back after a short break to wrap up our gardening show. If you've got questions, now is the time to call. Delay no more. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back to wrap up today's gardening show. My guests are the Flower Lady OTR owner, Christina Matthews, Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director, Peter Huttinger, and Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent, Sarah Imbus. If you've got questions or comments for our experts, you're running out of time. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. And we have Kelly on the line. Hi, Kelly. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I have a native flower bed, and it's huge. And I'm wanting to find a ground cover that I can plant in some of my open spaces so I don't have to mulch.
St. John's wort.
Okay. Did you hear what Sarah just said?
I did. St. John's wort.
Yep. But there is one because it is very aggressive. And
you mean it naturalizes easy?
Oh, yes. Yes. However one wants to interpret that. So you can email me as far as the exact species off the top of my head. I don't know that. But, you know, there's shrubby St. John's, and then there's horizontalis, so more of that creeps. But lovely plant. Beautiful, dainty little bloom. Of yellow.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I hope that helps, Kelly.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.
Thanks. And we've got some emails, and this gets to something that I know you wanted to talk about, Peter, and that is peppers and tomatoes. Okay. But John, we got an email from John. He writes, I experienced great difficulty with our peppers, both hot and bell, last year. In fact, a few of them even died, something that had never happened before. This year, I noticed that the peppers that I started from seed in the late winter and transplanted shortly after Mother's Day seem stunted, an observation based off minimal growth thus far. Am I starting things too early, or should I keep the faith that the best is yet to come and they will start to show signs of growth as the summer comes into full swing? So, Peter, what is the best pepper season? What's going on with John's peppers?
Well, peppers do not like cool weather. So that could be part of the situation. But they will recover.
Okay.
You know, unless you've got like dead tips on the leaves and things like that. But when it gets hotter, as we're moving into warmer weather now, they'll really shoot up. They do like consistent watering. You know, it's like the idea is 1 inch a week. But you also don't want to overwater them. And so to be mindful of that. That's also a really critical thing with tomatoes. Spacing also is very critical. You don't want them growing up next to each other. We plant them, you know, 2 to 3 feet apart at least when we're doing row cropping. Same thing with tomatoes. They'd like as much sun as possible, but, you know, make sure they have some good ventilation. But at this point, I would say, you know, you probably at the time of planting probably use some kind of fertilizer or fish emulsion. Then what you want to do is mid-season, like around early, last week of June, first week of July, no later than the second week of July, you want to do some side dressing of a fertilizer or compost or fish emulsion to kind of restart them. If they're already, if they're sort of stunted and they're producing flowers already, I would pinch the first flowers off. I think right then, so that they can get more energy into their roots and growing the plant itself. I don't know. Do you have any other suggestions, Sarah?
I want to say I did take my soil temperature a few weeks ago because that is true. We've had really cold evenings. You know, Mother's Day is great. We all get really excited, but that soil temperature, that's where it's at. And it was a little too cold, so they can start. And this morning I pinched off flowers of my tomato and peppers and did some side dressing actually on Monday to the peppers and tomatoes. So yeah, totally true. Soil temperature is a big deal.
Yeah. So Peter, what's the best time to plant tomatoes and peppers? I mean, ideally, should you wait a little longer than that Mother's Day time frame?
Well, the last, well, Mother's Day, the 18th of the month. No, that's still kind of where we want, you want to go. You just have to monitor it. You never, you know, I remember one year in May, you know, we had a huge, you know,
yes,
end of May. I mean, this was a number of years ago. There was like 4 inches of snow or something. Mm-hmm. Freaky things can happen. So have a sheet or some floating row cover to put over the things if you have to.
And then seeding and then transitioning that those little seedlings out. So you want to transition, right? So, you know, in a cold frame, something like that. But it's acclimating from, you know, a controlled environment, your house, and then out into Mother Nature, right? So a little bit of sunshine here, put them in the shade. I love a picnic table underneath. It can kind of get filtered light, some rain, but not overwhelm it. So that also could be it. It could just kind of be like, ah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also when you're growing them at home, if you're starting them off in small cells, small little pots, you know, if they start to get root bound, you do want to up pot them. Mm. And so sometimes if the plant is very root bound and people put it straight into the ground without teasing the roots out a little bit, they will sort of, you know, wrap around and almost like strangle themselves. They'll become it's called pot bound. But so that's something you want to, you know, to keep in mind.
Yeah. Well, we got an email from Rich. Rich writes, local nurseries are also more likely to have native and perennial native plant species for sale, whereas big box stores and nurseries are more likely to have non-native and ornamental annual plants for sale because they want you to be coming back every year to keep on replenishing the same kind of plants that you bought from them the prior year. Sounds like business. That's what business is. Is that what you found, Sarah?
And fruit trees, just a quick thing about fruit trees. I know, Peter, here you go. But, you know, can be challenging to find good varieties that do well in this area with our climate, disease pressure, insect pressure. So do your homework before buying that discounted fruit tree, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at some of these, you know, if I go to one of these big box stores to pick up a plumbing supplies or something, you know, I will always kind of look at the fruit trees. And I've seen very nicely pruned and very healthy looking trees, but they're all the wrong variety for this region.
Yes.
Mm. You know, like selling sweet cherries, they just don't do well here, you know, and the different certain varieties of apples and peaches and stuff, the same thing.
People say, oh, well, the first 5 years, they're gorgeous. And then it's like, okay, yeah. But then it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you want a 5-year fruit tree or a forever fruit tree?
Yes.
Local. And also I mentioned earlier about the Common Orchard Project. They're doing a lot with, you know, starting trees that are appropriate for this region.
Yeah. Figs, pawpaws, persimmon, branch out a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Peter, we talked about peppers, and we talked a little bit about tomatoes, but what's the danger in waiting too long to plant tomatoes? If you wait too late, can it get too hot for them?
Well, you'd want, I mean, that's the case with any plant. I mean, it's also, how the plant was cared for before you planted it. You know, so you need to be mindful if the plant is dried out and sickly, you know, you're probably not going to have good good results if the plant is heavy and vibrant, you know, planting it out later. I think then you were like what Sarah had said about transitioning the plant, that's super critical. You don't want to just take it from a very controlled environment and put it in, you know, full sun.
Yeah.
So I always say, you know, we have a, you know, the fruit, you know, will produce later, but you may have fruit longer.
Yeah.
And it also depends whether a determinate variety will produce more fruit in a short period of time, indeterminate, it's over a longer period of time. So if you're getting things in late, it might be a good idea to plant determinate varieties because they'll come riper in a shorter period of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Christina, we started off talking about cut flower gardens. How much homework do we need to do before deciding which kind of flower seeds to buy? You said it's not too late to get those seeds in the ground for some beautiful flowers. When is it too late? And what kind of research should people be doing before they just start dropping seeds in the dirt?
The first thing that comes to mind is just if you're in a store and you see all of these beautiful seed packets and you see all of these beautiful flowers, grab the one that gets your attention and turn it around and see how long does it take from seed to flower. That's usually in days, so 90 days or 100 days. And if you see that, then you can just count back on your calendar. We know that our first frost is somewhere in the middle of October. So as long as you're hitting that time frame, you can still plant. So the seeds that I started yesterday, they take about 90 days to flower. And I'm thinking that I'm going to use them specifically for a late September wedding. So the timing was perfect. So it's just knowing a few of those little tips and tricks and getting them in. Sunflowers are another great variety. You can plant a row a week for the next few weeks and have beautiful sunflowers all the way until the frost takes them out. So I'd say looking at the seed packet and reading that information on the back is where you'll find all of the things that are necessary for you to be successful in your cut flower garden.
Are there some flowers that just don't do well here that people fall in love with and they just do not do well in this area?
Well, for me particularly, I can't grow sweet peas for the life of me. I had all of these dreams of having these trellis sweet peas and, you know, I could never get them right. I'd start them in the spring. I'd start them in the fall. If I did have a good grouping, something weather related or the animals love those too. And I tend to have a lot of deer and groundhog pressure. But I would say if you just either one, follow some flower farmers on social media and see what they're doing. That's a really quick way of knowing, okay, I'm in Ohio and I'm in Cincinnati and these are growing great for them. I bet you they could for me. But the tried and true varieties are always going to be a safe bet. So your zinnias, your sunflowers, your celosia, gomphrena, those are great. And then if you really want to kind of get into it, buy a dahlia tuber.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with Turner Farm Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Imbus, and the Flower Lady OTR owner Christina Matthews. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks.
So fun.
It was fun.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. And if you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.